Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, November 20th. Time to review where I've been on one of the big issues of the year, Ireland, and the EU. Back on June 5th, I wrote, "We have a long, long way to go before we'll know if Europe can get its house in order. These are incredibly wrenching changes governments must implement, and you'd have to be an idiot to think the people will just take it all lying down, even though that would be totally appropriate given the binge they've been on. So you have a European continent that could be stuck in neutral at best for years, nay, decades. From my Week in Review, August 21st, it's going to be one very depressed continent once this all settles in. You are nuts if you are bullish on Europe in the short term. From my column, September 4th, I got a kick out of the happy talk from some European officials concerning the sovereign debt crisis that has been temporarily averted due to the joint IMF-EU bailout program for the likes of Greece. This week, the IMF said default in Greece and Ireland was unlikely. Paolo Moro, author of an IMF paper on the topic, said markets are overestimating the risk of default, to which I'd counter, not so fast, Paolo. 1.5% growth in the EU region is simply muddling through after the crash, and in all likelihood it means that Germany and France continue to carry the main share of the load while the others suffer. It also totally ignores that the austerity programs put in place by the governments haven't begun to bite yet. One of Britain's large food retailers, the Cooperative Group, warned the austerity drive there would erode consumer confidence and ensure that the economy would continue to bump along the bottom. It's just common sense, so Paolo, y'all ain't out of the woods yet." I wrote on September 11th, on return from my 18th trip to Ireland. "The national mood in Ireland is somber, even seething, the latter because of the criminal sums that the developers were given, plus the bonuses bank executives pay themselves, as well as taking astronomical personal loans. One fellow loaned himself $100 million, I kid you not. Needless to say, he is not in a position to repay it. The middle class is joining the dull queues in droves. The number of homes in negative equity is staggering. Many Irish workers who still have jobs have seen pay cuts of 10 to 15%, yet their taxes are skyrocketing to pay for the bank bailouts. It's a bit like the Irish personality," said one commentator. "They had a great party, but now there's a monumental hangover. And the Irish never saw it coming." I wrote on October 30th. "I found the head of the European Union's financial stability apparatus statement that the sovereign debt crisis is over remarkable for its infant-like quality. No doubt, Europe's austerity programs are in place to engender confidence, but what does it say when just days after the fellow's pronouncement, Ireland's 10-year bond traded at its highest yield compared to the German 10-year ever, even as Ireland's government said it would double its budget cuts over coming years? Why would this be so? I thought austerity was good. It is. It's needed. But now it's clear some governments, such as Ireland's and perhaps Spain's and Greece, are going overboard and killing any hope of recovery. Recovery needed for increased revenues, for starters." So that's what I've been writing on the topic. For new readers, I could have pointed out about 50 other pages worth of similar observations since the start of the year. Not one thing surprises me about what is going on in Europe, and there is only one cure for the ongoing sovereign debt crisis: significant growth. Coupled with the right amount of austerity, it doesn't kill the growth, but this is like threading the needle, and success in Europe is also dependent on a solid recovery in the U.S., as well as in Asia that can keep its engine running without stalling out. Virtually everything has to be perfect, which is impossible. What's been funny about the past 6 months in particular is how many positive voices there have been on Europe, and they've been consistently wrong, which is exactly what happened during the height of the real estate bubble, which yours truly identified was global through my trips overseas and talking to folks in pubs who were telling me about buying second homes in Spain, but I digress. This week, Ireland has been front and center, and as I go to post, details are being worked out on what looks to be up to a €100 billion bailout package for both the government and the Irish banks, the latter with tens of billions of bad real estate loans, the value of which continues to plummet. Many in Europe, like in Germany, whose leaderships are scared their own banks would one day have to realize the true value of their bank debt exposure on the Emerald Isle, want Ireland to accept the cash to stabilize the rest of the continent and the currency. UK banks, for example, have a $222 billion exposure to Ireland, German banks $206 billion. EU President Herman Van Rompuy said this week, "We are in a survival crisis. If we don't survive with the Eurozone, we will not survive with the European Union." And it being Europe, of course, there are deep divisions all over the place, particularly between the ECB, IMF, and Germany. It was German Chancellor Angela Merkel who really stirred things up when she sought to rewrite the EU's treaties to set up a new bailout system for Greek-like collapses, insisting that private investors bear more of a responsibility for such rescues, i.e. take a haircut on their holdings. Whereupon, after a bit of reflection, bond markets reacted furiously, forcing Germany and France, which had tagged along, to assure one and all that they weren't referring to current bondholders, only those involved in new issues after 2013. But it was the idea that Germany is dictating to everyone else how to run their finances that has even allies like the Netherlands and Austria ticked off at Merkel. And speaking of Austria, I've been saying with regards to the bailout mechanism currently in place that some of the Euro nations aren't going to want to participate in any bailout after Greece, and sure enough, Austria this week questioned why it should even transfer more funds to Athens when its deficit-cutting plan is already falling apart due to lower-than-expected revenues. Consider this. In April, Eurostat, the EU's statistics agency, said Greece's budget deficit was 13.6% of GDP. This week, it revised the figure to 15.4%. Just a slight adjustment. So no wonder an Austria says, hey, we have our own problems. What are we doing giving more to this ancient rat hole? And Austria then wants to have a say in any bailout of Ireland. So in the case of Ireland, that leads to one paramount issue. Ireland's corporate tax rate of 12.5% that in the years of the Celtic Tiger spurred growth. The likes of Germany, France, and now Austria are demanding that Ireland hike the rate, which Ireland's fellow Euromates have always felt gave Ireland an unfair competitive advantage. But the Irish government is saying, okay, we finally accept that we need help, but we must retain our sovereignty, as much of it as possible, and we will not change the corporate rate because it's only through an increase in exports that we can grow out of this mess. So how would, say, a doubling in the rate to 25% possibly help our economy? Europe needs growth. But as expected, it's every nation for itself, and for Ireland, many look at their problems as payback time. But while Ireland says its corporate tax rate is non-negotiable, a bailout will mean that the IMF will move in, demand new tax hikes elsewhere on Irishmen, along with further significant job and wage cuts in return for the loans. As for the banks, which as you can imagine are bleeding deposits at light speed, they need to be backstopped quickly for the IMF to then give its blessing. We hereby declare that all Irish banks are solvent and will stand beside them. Whereupon is then hoped the banks could go back into a marketplace that is currently shut to them and raise capital, which would perhaps keep them from borrowing too much from the IMF. So that's where we're at. As I go to post, the opposition in Ireland is calling for the resignation of Prime Minister Brian Cowan after one of the darkest weeks in its history. I got a note from a fellow member at Lahinch Golf Club over there on Friday, and he tells me the club is being forced to lay off significant numbers, which when I was there in August, they had been able to keep to a minimum. But the depression would appear to be deepening, and a depression, both monetarily and sentiment-wise, is exactly what Ireland is in these days. Bloomberg had this quote from a native, 77-year-old Bill Phelan, on the events of just the past week. "As an Irishman who has lived all his life in the Irish Free State, it is painful to think that we'll be handing over our sovereignty. I regret that all I have worked and saved for may be crumbling under my feet. I worry for my children. If Mr. Phelan's family is like others in the country, as I noted last week, one in three between the ages of 25 and 34 have lost their jobs, and many of these are now fleeing the country." Well, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development warned that the housing markets in the UK and US could face a double dip, which would then slow consumption all over again. Yes, it's still all about jobs and housing. This week in the U.S., October housing starts plummeted again to a level far worse than expected, and the fewest since April 2009. Record low mortgage rates have failed to boost demand, and as D.R. Horton, the nation's second largest home builder, said a week ago, 2011 promises to be another challenging year. Employment is still weak, and as the CEO said, it's hard to sell a home to an unemployed person. As for Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke and his quantitative easing, part deux, he aggressively defended his plan to buy up to $600 billion in Treasury securities and other assets, while critics rail he is fueling inflation beyond the Fed's control and that there is no exit strategy. Bernanke took his defense to Frankfurt and a meeting of bankers. Quote, globally, both growth and trade are unbalanced because a strong expansion in the emerging market economies will ultimately depend on a recovery in the more advanced economies. This pattern of two-speed growth might very well be resolved in favor of slow growth for everyone if the recovery in the advanced economies falls short. Close quote. Bernanke went on to say, essentially, what would you guys do if you had 9.6% unemployment and the job picture continued to look gloomy? He also took a shot at China's currency policy, but didn't call them out by name. Speaking of China, after earlier reporting consumer prices had risen 4.4% in October, and as the cost of vegetables and other staples has soared, though to me there are signs already prices have stabilized if you dig deep enough into the papers there, the government talked of price controls, subsidies for the poor, and a crackdown on speculators and hoarders, all of which, except the subsidies, isn't easy. Beijing additionally raised reserve requirements again on the banks, and an interest rate hike seems a certainty as the government tries to slow down the economy. But it's civil unrest that scares China's leaders to death, and as I've addressed the whole topic of food shortages before, especially a week in review, September 4, what's worrisome to me is China's paranoia in all areas, it seems these days, such as in its crackdown on dissent, addressed further in my column of this week. I'm watching it closely, given my huge holding in Fujian province. Not that I would jettison it anytime soon, but I keep looking for anything that can change the economic outlook in any significant way. Turning to the U.S., when it comes to inflation, the official numbers this week could not have been better. The October Producer Price Index, expected to be up 0.8%, came in up 0.4%, with the core rate, ex food and energy, down 0.6%. The consumer price index for the month was up 0.2% with the core rate unchanged. Over the past 12 months, the core CPI is at its lowest rate since the government started keeping such figures in its current format in 1958. Of course, a core rate of 0.6% also means that at least by this data set, we are dangerously close to outright deflation, which has been Bernanke's big concern all along. You don't have to believe the numbers when it comes to the realities of things like healthcare cost and food prices, but this is what the Fed is focused on. Meanwhile, the capacity utilization rate for October is still just 74.8, which means don't look for any wage growth, among other things, with that excess capacity in the system. But on the plus side, retail sales for October were up a solid 1.2%, and the gauge of leading economic indicators rose a fourth consecutive month. Turning to the stock market, doesn't get any duller than this. Stocks were literally unchanged this week, with the Dow Jones adding 11 points to 11,203, or just 0.1%, while the S&P 500 and NASDAQ finished at the same round numbers as the prior week, 1199 and 2518, respectively. My recollection is this has happened just once before since I've been tracking such stuff, which is over 12 years now. Early in the week, the market got a boost from Caterpillar's $8.6 billion acquisition of Bucyrus International, a maker of shovels and drills, but as the week progressed, it was more about China and Ireland and the uncertainty these two engendered. That's all for this week. Have a great Thanksgiving. I'll be back with you Saturday, November 27th. Take care.